All right, so Chag Sameach, everybody. Thank you for coming. We'll have sheets to look at. Okay, so we'd like to discuss over the next couple of minutes, probably 15, 20 minutes or so. So the idea that Yerushalayim was reconquered 50 years ago today, what halachic impact, did anything change halachically at that moment? Anything, something that we've been practicing for a while, is anything now different than it was? That's the question I want to raise. So the first thing I want to point to is something that did not change on that day. That's because the question is not about the after it was reunified, the question is more about before it was reunified. And that is the question of Shushan Purim. So just to touch on that, we know that we celebrate Purim on the 14th of Adar. In walled cities from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, they celebrate on the 15th of Adar. Practically, how many cities in the world celebrate Purim only on celebrate Shushan Purim? How many? One. It's only one. Yerushalayim is the only one that celebrates Purim on the 15th. There are other cities that are somewhat questionable. Lod is a questionable city. Tzfat is a questionable city. There's the questions about cities that are surrounding Yerushalayim that are, you could kind of see it and kind of not. When I was in Yeshiva in Mevaseret, that was one of the questionable cities. Ramoth is a questionable issue. Efrat is a questionable issue. A lot of those things are questionable because they're visible. But in terms of city, it's only because are they related to Yerushalayim or not? That's the question that is raised. But what about if you're in the city of Yerushalayim but not within the walls? So that we know, we extend that Yerushalayim extends to the entire city. The entire city is celebrating Purim on the 15th. What about when the walled city was cut off? What about when the old city of Yerushalayim did not have any Jews in it? The reason why we extend to the rest of Yerushalayim is because, well, it's considered one city, and we extend from the walled part out. So if the walled city is celebrating on the 15th, outside of the walled city, we're going to celebrate on the 15th as well. What about when you don't have access to the old city? So this happened right after the War for Independence. People don't necessarily realize this. The War of Independence was a victory. We won. But there was one significant loss that took place in 1948 in the war that took place then, and that is Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, the old city of Yerushalayim, had Jews living there for centuries upon centuries, really not totally uninterrupted, but pretty much uninterrupted from the year 5th, 6th century. And came 1948, the Jordanian army moved in and made the old city of Yerushalayim Judenrein. There's some stories about that that are told. If you're in Yerushalayim, in the old city, there are some certain memorials that you might pick up on from that period, but that's what happened during that period. So all of a sudden, the Jews found themselves in a brand new state, but all of a sudden cut off from the old city of Yerushalayim. So for centuries and centuries and centuries in Yerushalayim, they were celebrating on the 15th. And now the question is, do we continue to celebrate on the 15th, even though we don't have access to the old city? So there is a tshuva from Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank wrote the Shailos HaTshuvos Har Tzvi. He was a Rav in Yerushalayim in the time. He is the great-grandfather of Rav Yonason Sacks, who is coming and speaking this evening. It happens to be his, I think, great-grandfather. If one looks in the Torah Academy Aron Kodesh, there is a Torah dedicated to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Unclear why Rabbi Enten called me a couple of years ago, asked me if I had any idea why that would possibly be. There is a relationship that the Frank family has through Rav Yonason Sacks. Somehow, somebody came to Philadelphia at some point and probably gave money for that. Rabbi Sacks' father was a Rav here in Philadelphia? All right, so that could very well be what the connection is. So if we look here, at source number one, you could see the date of the tshuva. The date of the tshuva itself is somewhat chilling in that it says, Adar Tafshin Tes. Tafshin Tes is Adar 1949. So this is the first Purim following the War for Independence, and now everybody's wondering, when do we celebrate Purim that year? So the title is Man Kriyas HaMegillah B'Yerushalayim HaChadasha K'Shahaisa Minutekes Me'ir Atika HaMukefes Homa. What is the time of reading the Megillah in Yerushalayim, in the new city of Yerushalayim, when the old city has been minutekes, has been detached, has been separated from us. And the first line of the tshuva is B'davar ha'arasa alzman kriyas ha'megil b'Yerushalayim k'hayom, today, she'Yerushalayim ha'atika ha'mukafes choma, Yerushalayim, the old city of Yerushalayim that's surrounded by a wall, he kula bidei gayim v'shum yehudi lo nimsaba. It is entirely in the hand of non-Jews, and there are no Jews there. It is totally bereft of Jews. Now, it is a somewhat lengthy tshuva. It depends on different ways of reading a Yerushalmi. There's a dispute about how to read it and what the correct yirsa is, and that's his discussion. But at the very end, his conclusion is, the part that I underline, Mikol Malkum Kosha V'samuch Lo Yesh Sham Asara Batlanim Gam HaKrach Atzmo Krach Sheyesh Bo Asara Batlanim Mikrei V'Yisrael Nechnasim B'Sham V'Purim Yikra B'Tasva V'Gam Asamuch LeKrach Yikra B'Tasva. He says it doesn't matter. He said the city, even though the city might be identified based on the old city, based on the walled part, if there are 10 people in the city, in general, even if they're not in the walled part, you're still going to maintain the character of the old city of Yerushalayim. And for that reason, suggests Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and that I believe was the minhag, is that they would continue to celebrate Purim on the 15th. Imagine the change that would have been for centuries over the 14th, and now we lost it. Would have been, it's, but the, just the way the question is raised, I think, just adds some of the importance of the day. So that no longer is a shaila, and that actually is something that did not change because they celebrate on the 15th then, and they celebrate on the 15th. But there's a couple of other issues, and it somewhat reflects on how do we understand Yerushalayim? What is Yerushalayim to us as a spiritual center? What is the meaning of it? So there is a Maseches, something called Maseches Kehillah. Maseches Kehillah is known as being one of the most difficult Masechtos in all Shas, 30 chapters long, and when you learn it, the first paragraph all of a sudden it gets pretty easy because it just has these lists, and then it gets very hard after that. But in the first chapter, it spells out the levels of sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, that there's 10 levels of sanctity starting from the place of the Aron expanding out, and those Mishnayos actually build up to it. So Mishnah Vav says there's 10 Kedushos in the land. There's Mikudash, that in the land, the fact that Eretz Yisrael is more sanctified than the rest of the world. What is that? How is it more sanctified than the rest of the world? Because in Israel, we do things like the Omer, Bikurim, and Shtei HaLechem. That is the land where we can get the material for the Korban HaOmer, that the actual barley sacrifice had to come from Israel. Bikurim, the first fruits that are offered in Yerushalayim came from Israel, are only in Israel. And the Shtei HaLechem, the sacrifice that's offered on Shavuos, had to come from produce in Israel. What's absent from this Mishnah? What's somewhat conspicuously absent from this Mishnah of things that are only in Israel and not in the rest of the world? So things like Truma and Meiser, the tithes, those kinds of things are not here. These things are here. Why are these things here? Because all of these are relative to Yerushalayim, right? These are things, even though they can come from the rest of Israel, they're all things that are brought to Yerushalayim, all things that are brought to. So that's level one. Level two is, then Iris HaMukafas Chom, if you have a walled city, which is referring to Yerushalayim, it's sanctified in that the people are sent out from it that have various levels of Tumah. Various levels of inferiority. You said I should have waited, right? Yeah, all right, I'm sorry. So number one is they kicked out the Mitzorayim, and umesavim l'sochan meis achi yirtzu yatsa in machzirin oso, that when the dead are sent out, so they're not supposed to be brought back in. There aren't supposed to be burial grounds in Yerushalayim. In fact, there aren't. There are no cemeteries. Sorry, there are, but those cemeteries that there are were what? Those cemeteries, so I'm right again. So those cemeteries that exist, there are a few, really existed before when the city didn't really expand to those sections.
Inside the wall?
What? Certainly not inside the walls, but the other ones as well were not incorporated into the city. They existed before, then the city kind of grew around them, I believe so. Okay. And then the third one level is inside the wall is more sanctified, that you could eat kachim kalu, meiser sheni, harabais, mekudesh, and harabais is the most sanctified of all of them. So there's a hierarchy here of things relative to Yerushalayim as to what's allowed to be done in the rest of the places. Okay, so there's now a Tosfos in Yevamah. This gets a little bit more complicated here. There is a question that is out there that appears, I don't know, every 50 dafim in Shas. This question comes up of, is the sanctity still there? When Yerushalayim was sanctified and when Israel was sanctified, did that sanctity continue on even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash? So there's a question about the first Beis HaMikdash, second question about the second Beis HaMikdash, and there's a question about Yerushalayim, and there's a question about the rest of Israel. Do all of those things extend itself? And Tosfos points out that there's actually a distinction. On one hand, we assume that the sanctity of Yerushalayim extended itself, that continued on, while the sanctity of Israel seems to have stopped, and brings different proofs. The Yerushalayim, we assume, Tosfos is assuming, is still, or the Beis HaMikdash is still considered holy, while Israel is only holy on a level of Durabanan, only on a rabbinic level. So, for example, Truma, Meisr, those things are only Durabanan, are only rabbinic Bizman HaZeh. That's what. So, why should there be a distinction? And Tosfos itself also seems to have, Rambam also seems to make this distinction, that on one hand we say that, you could join us, yeah.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. 12:30, yeah. Sorry. That on one hand, oh, you don't have to leave. What? Okay. That on one hand we have the Yerushalayim itself that seems to be, or the Beis HaMikdash that the sanctity continues, while in the rest of Israel it seems to stop. So why should there be that distinction? Why would we differentiate between Yerushalayim versus the rest of Israel? Right? Together. What? Oh, we got room. Why would we make that distinction? Why would it be that Beis HaMikdash continues while Israel seems to have ceased? So Rav Shechter in his Sefer Be'kvei Atzon points out that Yerushalayim, really there's two issues with regards to Yerushalayim that we're celebrating. On one hand it is the religious center. On the other hand it is the capital of all of Israel. There is the religious sanctity aspect, and then there is the political aspect. So he suggests that when it comes to the sanctity of things revolving the religion, so that is based on not whether there are Jews there, but rather whether there is a Shekhinah there. And how is the Shekhinah represented? Representative by the, we talked about this in the Shir about an hour ago, by the Aron. That the Aron is there, and therefore the sanctity is still there. And because the sanctity is still there, so therefore, all the Kedusha, all of the sanctity relative to the Beis HaMikdash is still going to continue to exist, right? That's true. There's idea that of the Shekhinah being Begalus. It's true. That's a good point. So I would say that the focus of that, though, comes from the Aron itself. So the Aron is still there. So you're right. You got to work out those homiletically, how to work that out. But the basis for the Shekhinah is still there. The Aron is still present. So anything relative to the Aron, anything relative to the Ark, is still going to be Kadosh, continuous until today. Well, anything that is political in nature, anything that is based on whether there are Jews present or whether they are not, so that's going to be something that we're going to consider to only be if there are Jews there or if they're not. Right? So that then explains the duality. That things focused on Yerushalayim, right, that's still there. Things focused on political Israel, so that's not necessarily there anymore. So here we get to a halacha that perhaps may have changed. There is a halacha, as you can see I didn't put a number on it, but the bottom source on the page. There is a halacha that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that every time you go, you'll see people do this, when you go to the Kotel for the first time in 30 days, so we rend our garments. Now, it's always difficult to do because you're not allowed to bring any razors to the to the Kotel. So then you get stuck in how we're going to do this. But that is the halacha. The halacha, there's some ways people get around it, whatever, but really, yeah, that's something that is a worthwhile thing to do. And we rend our garments when we get to the Kotel. The halacha actually is not just when you see the Beis HaMikdash in its destruction, when you see Yerushalayim in its destruction, and when you see Arei Yehuda in its destruction. When you see the mountains that are surrounding Yerushalayim, when those are in destruction as well, we would rend our garments. So the question was raised, okay, what about if they're not really in their destruction? What about if there are Jews there? What about if we own it? So the Magen Avraham says, at the bottom source on the page comments, even when there are Jews there, because the other nations have... have sovereignty there, we still have to rend our garments. So if you showed up in the Ari Yehuda, in the mountains surrounding Yerushalayim, in the year 1944, or the 1930, or 1920, you would rend their garments, even though there were Jews living there, right? Because there was foreign sovereignty, right? It's still a problem. Implication being what? Implication being today, you wouldn't tear there. What about the Beis HaMikdash? When you get to the Kotel, would you still do it? Yes. Why? Because that's not about whether the Jews own it or not. That's about whether the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed or not. Right? So that's the Beis HaMikdash you would tear. The wall, the mountains around Yerushalayim, you wouldn't. What about Yerushalayim itself? Would you tear your garments upon seeing Yerushalayim? So the so Shechter, again, different essay in the same book, quotes from the Rav that he said, yeah, that he says, Ach benogeya, the top right part on the back side of the page, Ach benogeya l'chovas ha-kriyal Yerushalayim b'tvor bana, v'zeh nechtu g'doye v'azmenu. There are those that say that it's based on the political, that we own it, and there are those that say on the spiritual, that we don't. And he says, Achein, the second paragraph, Shemati from the Rav, She'enu nirakein, v'tvei nir she'chovas ha-kriyal Yerushalayim hi, v'toras ha-velos ala mikdash b'tvor bana. That tearing on Yerushalayim is because the base of Mikdash still isn't built. That ultimately, until the base of Mikdash is built, Yerushalayim is still considered destroyed. No matter how many skyscrapers go up, and no matter how quickly the light rail runs, right, it's still considered Berchorbano. We're going to tear our garments. There is on the left side of the page one of the more famous art scroll censorships of all time, where he comes with the same conclusion. This is taken from Rabbi J.D. Schachter's article on censorship, where there is a Sefer Moadim B'Halacha written by Rav Zevin, where he writes in the Hebrew version that the same halacha, Churban al Ari Yehuda hu sha'akum mushlam aleinu, that the Churban of the walls around, of the mountains around Yerushalayim, is when the non-Jews have sovereignty there. However, if you were able to free them, and there are Jews that were there, and then he adds in, Vakamas Medina Yisrael Ashrein Shizakinu Lakach, Batal Din Kriyal Osam al Osam Ha'arim. And but if we were able to get our sovereignty, and he adds in, and how wondrous we live in a time when we have sovereignty, so that halacha would then fall away. So in the art school translation of that book, it left out those bolded words. It left out the words of, now with the rise of the land of Israel, we have our sovereignty. It just left those words out. Right. So in one of the famous art school censorships of all time, which they should be called out on. But anyways, that seems to be halacha. We don't tear on the Ari Yehuda. We do tear in the Beis HaMikdash. Yerushalayim is a question, and the Rav felt that one should tear even in Yerushalayim. Generally, it's combined. Generally, when you go to Yerushalayim, so you go from Yerushalayim and go straight to the Kotel. So the idea is then we usually do it together at the same time. But that is that's the law. So that's in terms of change. Do we continue to tear Kriya? Yes, we do. One more issue here. Actually, another thing that Rav Schechter comments on, also relative to current events, is about moving the embassy. Rav Schechter writes that the whole question about whether America should move the embassy and recognize Yerushalayim as the capital, he suggests that maybe Americans, by not moving it, are right. Because for a Jewish government to be in charge, who needs to be in charge? A king. There has to be a king from the Davidic line. So he says that maybe we shouldn't be recognized as the capital, we should keep the capital elsewhere. But then he goes on and says, but you know, there is basis for a democratic memshalah. There is basis for a democratic a government in Israel. I think I gave a shiur on that in the Kollel a long time ago, 6 years ago or so. There is basis for that. And the other, in terms of Jewish security, it also perhaps makes sense to move it. But whatever, he just raises that argument.
Question: isn't your machlokes just been shown in Rambam and the Ramban as to whether appointing a king is mandatory or optional?
They have a machlok about whether it needs to be from Beis David or not. The question about whether you're going to go king or other, that you got to wait a few centuries to get to that discussion.
Does that appear in contemporary posting?
It appears in theory, not really in posting. The Nitziv has a piece on it. I'd have to track it down. Okay. One more question just to discuss, and that is the Tefillah of Nachim. So that comes up every year on... I forgot to bring a copy of it with me. But the on Tisha B'Av, we say Nachim in our Shmona Esrei at Mincha. And if you go through that tefillah, so that tefillah says, woe unto us, and how Yerushalayim is now bereft of people, and it's desolate, and it's destroyed, and there's nobody there, and it's dusty, and it lists all of these things as if Yerushalayim doesn't exist anymore. And for 2,000 years when that tefila was written until about 50 years ago, it was correct. Yerushalayim was totally b'churbanah. So when 1967 happened, so the question, remember, it happened in June. Shavuos happened right away afterwards when all of Israel pretty much ended up at the Kotel. And then a month later is Shiva Aser B'Tammuz. And a month after that is then Tisha B'Av. So the way I've heard the story was nobody was in the mood to celebrate Tisha B'Av that summer. It just wasn't like on anybody's agenda. So question one was, do we observe Tisha B'Av? And that, I think everyone said, yeah. The second question is, okay, but do we do it in the same way? That tefillah of Nachim, do we continue to say it that way? Or perhaps because Yerushalayim is now built up, perhaps it's inappropriate. And as somebody gave a shiur in our shul a couple of years ago, perhaps it's even demonstrating a lack of hakaras hatov. It's demonstrating a lack of being thankful that we're still going to describe Yerushalayim in a destroyed fashion when in fact it's not. So that question was raised. Do we change it? Do we leave it out? B, do we say it as usual? Or C, do we change it in some particular ways? So if one looks, there's a website called Torah Musings where he spells out, I think, six different opinions as to what to do, what changes to make. Varon Lichtenstein had what to say on it. Rav Avi Yosef had what to say on it. Rav Shlomo Goren, I think, said, I forget if he said to get rid of it or he totally changed the tefillah. Maybe some, I think Varon Lichtenstein says that we should say it as it's been, meaning instead of using those terms to talk about how destroyed the land is, to talk about it in past tense rather than in present tense. So those are questions that are out there. So I'll just give the two sources here. One is, I also came across this on Rabbi Gil's student's website, that Rav Aviner famously takes texts. He takes questions over text, and he gives you answers. And he has a remarkable ability to give an answer to a halakha question in, 160 characters or less. He just answers it back. So one question that, and it's been published, by the way. There's a book you can get of Rav Aviner's texts questions back and forth. So one question is, has not the time arrived to change the text of Nachim, the city that is destroyed, despised, and desolate, in reference to Jerusalem? And he responds, he's also the Rosh Yeshiva of Ateres Kohanim in the Muslim quarter. Please come and visit our yeshiva Ateres Yerushalayim in the heart of the old city of Jerusalem in the Muslim quarter, and you'll be persuaded. And you'll be persuaded that we still have not gotten to where we need to get to. And one more, the Rav, also Rav Salvechik, also was, Rav Shechter, this is really in a chapter where he describes how the Rav never wanted to change any traditions and never wanted to change any tefillos. And he tells the story that when it was publicized that one of the rabbis in America said that it's correct to change the tefillah of Nachim that we say on Tisha B'Av, so the Rav got very upset. And he said that she'inenu ro'a b'zeh shum tzara, he doesn't think you should change it at all. Shekol od shelo yeh hamikdash banu yal makomo, as long as the Beis HaMikdash has not been rebuilt, kol yir Yerushalayim hi b'b'chinas avela v'churba. Then the Yerushalayim is considered still in the desolated state. So that, again, goes to this question. Are we looking at the political Yerushalayim? Are we looking at the religious Yerushalayim? But so long as the Beis HaMikdash has still been rebuilt, it's still all focused on the religious side, and therefore we can't consider it as being rebuilt. He actually has a cute footnote here that when an astronaut landed on the moon, somebody said in Kiddush HaLevana, in the blessing of the new moon every month, Kiddush HaLevana, again. So one of the things that we say is, Kishem Shani Rukei Kenegidech, that even though I'm able to dance opposite you, still any yachol in Goa Bach, I can't come and touch you. So someone said, what do you mean? Neil Armstrong just touched it. So maybe we should change that to paragraph as well. To which the Rav responded, he said, no, when you're saying Kiddush Levana, you can't touch it, right? You're down here, it's up there, so you can't touch it. So anyway, the Rav never wanted to change any of those paragraphs. He never didn't want to change this either. So anyways, as we talked about before, that David Weiss Halivni, right? He points out in his book Like Dreamers that when all the paratroopers and when the army came, the first place they came, or the first place Rav Goren came, was on top of the Temple Mount. That's where they got. And then they all, for some reason, and it's unclear, nobody really knows why, but they all left and went to the Kotel. But if they were on Har HaBayit, why did they go to the Kotel, right? They were where they wanted to be ultimately. And perhaps the answer is it still reflects this goes back. Whatever that means, we weren't ready. We're not ready. Yeah, Right, but ultimately we wait to get to the point that we no longer have to ask these questions, and it's obvious that Yerushalayim will no longer be Bukhar Banu in its any destructive state in any way, and we should hopefully get to that point. Meher v'yameinu very soon. Amen. Chag Sameach.
Could you comment on the question of whether there is strength between opinion?